Persigo Press presents the Henry Rios Mysteries podcast. Hello, this is Michael Nava, author of a series of crime novels featuring Henry Rios, a gay Mexican-American criminal defense lawyer, and the producer of this podcast. Today we present Lay Your Sleeping Head, the first novel in the series. Lay Your Sleeping Head opens in the summer of 1982 in the fictional town of Linden, California, 30 miles south of San Francisco. Linden is the home of the prestigious university of the same name, founded in the 19th century by railroad tycoon Grover Linden. Henry Rios is a public defender, born and raised in a small town in California's Central Valley and from a working-class Mexican-American family. He is a graduate of Linden University and its top-ranked law school. In 1982, there is no internet. People smoke in bars and on airplanes. Most gay men are closeted, and no one has heard of AIDS. It's an America where 83% of the people identify as white, 85% as Christian, and 83% say that homosexuality is morally wrong. Ronald Wilson Reagan, who once declared that trees cause more pollution than automobiles, is the president of the United States. In this final episode, Rios gets to the truth of who killed Hugh Paris and why, but one question remains.
It was raining when I pulled into the circular driveway that fronted the massive Linden residence at the top of Nob Hill. A maid met me at my car with an umbrella and walked me into the great hall. From there, the butler led me into the library where John Smith was sitting in a wing chair beneath the grim portrait of his grandfather. He was wearing the same costume as he had worn the first time I met him. Blue blazer, white shirt, khaki trousers, carpet slippers. His smile was curious and a little wary. He extended a trembling hand.
"Hello, Henry. I didn't expect to have the pleasure of seeing you again so soon after our last meeting. It's raining. You must be cold. Would you like a cup of coffee? Gerald, coffee, please."
"Yes, Mr. Smith. And sir, it's time for your medication."
"Fine. Bring that too."
"Are you ill?"
"I'm 81. Sadly, there is no cure for it."
"This room, it's very imposing."
"Hugh called it my mausoleum. Poor boy hated the house. I would tease him that someday it would be his, and he'd have to live here and abide by the terms of my grandfather's will."
"What terms were those?"
"Grover Linden specified that nothing in the house was to be changed. Other than necessary replacements and maintenance, it looks exactly the same as when he was alive. You see, I am not so much a resident here as a curator. Ah, here's Gerald with your coffee and my poison."
"Thank you. You're not having any?"
"Caffeine no longer agrees with me. Very little does, I'm afraid. Caldwell said there was something on your mind you wanted to discuss with me."
"It's about a document I found at the home of my friend, Aaron Gold. An amendment to the Linden Trust."
"Gold. Gold. This was the man who conspired with Peter Barron to kill Hugh, and who Barron killed in turn. How did you know him?"
"We were law school classmates at Linden. We were also best friends. And I don't believe he had anything to do with Hugh's murder. Not after I read the amendment to the trust."
"And how did Mr. Gold obtain this document?"
"He was a lawyer at the firm that represented Judge Paris."
"Ah, so he took the document. Isn't it impermissible for a lawyer to share his client's confidential records?"
"It is, but Aaron wanted me to see the document because he thought it explained who killed Hugh."
"Barron killed Hugh, and Mr. Gold assisted him. That being the case, I should think you would be very skeptical of any attempts by Mr. Gold to exonerate himself."
"Aaron was like a brother to me. I don't believe he had anything to do with Hugh's death. Mr. Smith, I know that you and Caldwell cooked up a story to implicate Aaron.
Cooked up, you say? Strong words. Why ever would Mr. Caldwell and I do such a thing?
To divert suspicion from the man who is actually responsible for Hugh's death. The man Baron worked for. You, Mr. Smith. You had Hugh killed. I know I'll never be able to prove it. But he trusted you. And I need to know why you betrayed him.
How extraordinary. I was the only member of my family who cared for Hugh. I supported him all those years when he seemed intent on destroying himself. And you think, after all that, I had anything to do with his death?
Yes.
What possible motive could I have had to injure the boy?
I think it was all about control of the Linden University Trust. Hugh wasn't going to expose his grandfather as a pedophile. He was going to expose him as a murderer. He was gathering evidence to prove that Judge Perry's killed his wife and son. And he tried to convince you to help him. You refused and told him the car crash that had killed him was an accident. But you knew better. You knew that Judge Perry's had Christina and Jeremy killed. You used that knowledge to force the judge to sign the amendment to the trust that stripped him of any real authority and gave you complete control. If Hugh had exposed the judge as a murderer, the judge would have had to resign as trustee and Hugh would have replaced him. But Hugh wouldn't have been bound by the amendment you forced the judge to sign. He would have had authority over the trust equal to yours. You needed to stop him. The only thing I don't understand is what's so important about the goddamn trust that you had him killed? It's just money.
Your coffee's getting cold, Henry.
That's all you have to say?
You know, I am a great reader of mystery novels. It's my guilty pleasure. And this astonishing story of yours would make a wonderful plot.
Is this a game to you, sir?
Dear boy, if you haven't already, you will soon discover that life is a game. But we are not the players. We are the pieces moved around a board by a cruel and invisible hand, of which we see only the smallest part. A square ahead, a square behind.
Mr. Smith, do you deny that you had Hugh killed?
Of course I do. I loved Hugh. I understood Hugh. I knew what he was. What you are.
Gay? You are too, aren't you?
Gay. What an unfortunate choice of word to describe a way of life that is anything but gay. In any event, whatever I was, I no longer am. Not a brash, hot-blooded young man like you, Henry, filled with youthful ardor and an unshakable conviction in his own rightness. No, I am an old spider in a dusty web.
Now you are beginning to sound like a character in a mystery novel.
Most days, the only people I talk to are servants and doctors, so I'm out of practice with polite conversation. Not that our conversation is particularly polite, but you interest me. Hugh spoke of you with great affection. Seems you returned it.
I loved him. You haven't answered my question, sir.
Let me throw it back at you. Why would I have been so concerned about Hugh becoming a co-trustee that I would have done such a thing?
You've just admitted you knew Judge Perez killed his wife and son.
Clever man. Let's assume, hypothetically, that that's true, and I knew about it.
Okay, I'll play your game. Hypothetically, how would you have discovered that Judge Perez had his wife and son killed in that car crash?
Hypothetically? Let's say there was a witness. A man named, let's call him Hansen. Perhaps he saw the accident and perhaps he had the presence of mind to memorize the license plate number of the car that drove Jeremy off the road.
The police said Hansen was drunk.
He was quite sober and told my investigators everything he had told the police. But, unlike the police, my people were not paid off by Bob Paris. Sadly, after Bob found out that Hansen had given us the identity of the man he hired to kill my sister and nephew, Mr. Hansen was shot in an apparent robbery.
Why didn't you go to the police and have the judge arrested?
Bob loathed me, you know. The pansy grandson of the great Grover Linden. He was not alone in his disdain. My own father, well, that's ancient history. Many people despised me, but Bob was especially vicious. He let no opportunity pass to insult me, to humiliate me. Perhaps you know such men yourself.
Yes.
Then perhaps you can also imagine the satisfaction I felt when I put the man under my thumb. The prize he had killed for denied him. His very freedom at my sufferance.
Are you saying you let him get away with murder to get revenge because he bullied you?
He did not get away with anything. He was punished. And the punishment I inflicted on him was far worse for him than prison would have been. It wasn't simply revenge, if that's what you think. There were other, larger considerations, too. I had my grandfather, his legacy, and the family to think about. My family's privacy. We do not air our dirty laundry in public.
Dirty laundry? He killed your sister and nephew.
Don't you think I know that? You don't understand. I am not as other men. I am the guardian of Linden University, the custodian of my grandfather's great gift to the world. This has been my life's work. I can't allow any hint of scandal to attach itself to the memory of Grover Linden or to his university.
Your grandfather was a ruthless capitalist responsible for hundreds of deaths on his railroad. He built a university with blood money.
My grandfather was a visionary. The university was his vision.
Is that why you had Hugh killed? To protect your grandfather's vision? To prevent Hugh from creating the kind of scandal you thought you had avoided by forcing the judge to sign the amendment? Your gentleman's agreement?
Hugh was unstable. All he wanted was revenge on his grandfather, no matter the cost to the family.
No. It wasn't your family you were worried about. You were worried about yourself. If Hugh had taken down his grandfather and the whole story came out, you would have gone down with him as an accessory to the murders. It's not just the judge who would have had to resign as trustee. You would have had to resign too, and Hugh would have been left in control. So you had Baron kill him to save your own skin. Where is Baron, by the way? Hold up somewhere until you give him the all-clear signal to come back?
Mr. Baron, unfortunately, fell to his death from the balcony of his room on the 15th floor of his hotel in Jakarta.
And with him, the last witness to your crimes. No punishment for you.
Punishment takes many forms. One of them is to awaken in terror in the middle of the night, night after night, and to know the cause of that terror is not a dream or an illusion, but a real thing, and that it is coming for you.
What are you talking about?
My hands. See how they shake? Parkinson's disease. No cure for it. Nothing ahead of me but a long, slow decline that will leave me unable to walk, to talk, to take care of myself. Isn't that enough punishment for you?
You deserve whatever happens to you.
Perhaps so. I'm tired now and I want you to leave. But before you do, a word of advice. You shouldn't be so trusting of your bedmates.
Hugh never gave me any reason not to trust him.
I'm not talking about Hugh. I meant Grant Hancock.
I haven't been to Ocean Beach in years. There used to be an amusement park called Playland on the other side of the Great Highway. It was broken down and ratty, but I loved it. My dad would take me up on the Ferris wheel and say, "Look, see that island out there? That's Japan." I mean, of course, it was just the Farallons. You're being very quiet.
Let's sit for a minute.
Sure. Thanks for coming to lunch with my folks. They really like you.
I like them too.
My dad finally has someone he can talk to about baseball, and my mom, well, my mom likes beautiful things. She, wasn't too gushing, was she?
A bit. I have some questions for you. And I need you to answer them truthfully.
That sounds ominous. Of course, I'll answer truthfully. Ask away.
How did Peter Barron know to wait for me outside of your apartment the night he grabbed me?
I'm not sure I understand the question.
Did you tell him I was coming to your place?
How'd you figure it out?
Originally, I thought Barron had followed me from Linden to your place that night. But he wouldn't have had any reason to unless he knew I was snooping around Hugh's death. And how would he have known that unless you told him? It was Barron you called, not Smith, after I told you Hugh had been killed.
Yes. I talked to Peter that day.
Did he tell you to invite me to your place to talk?
Peter said Smith was really upset about Hugh's death, and the last thing he needed was someone making trouble. He wanted me to talk to you face to face and see what you were all about. I swear I wasn't trying to set you up.
But you knew it was Barron who abducted me, who trashed my apartment and took Hugh's papers?
Not at first. But yes, after you told me about the papers, I called Peter and asked him if he was responsible. He admitted it.
What else did you tell him?
I told him what you had told me. That there was nothing in the papers that proved the judge had anything to do with the car accident. I told him he should leave you out of this.
And none of this seemed important enough for you to mention it to me?
You have to understand. Peter was an old friend, and Smith and my dad go back a long way. I wanted to believe that whatever they were doing was to protect the family.
But you were wrong. They did what they did to cover up Hugh's murder.
And I had no way of knowing that.
But then, even after you knew Barron had abducted me and broken into my apartment, you sent me to see him and tell him I had evidence that Hugh was killed.
I had to. You insisted on talking to Smith, and to get to him, you had to go through Peter.
What else did you tell Barron before you sent me to see him?
That you still believed Hugh had been murdered, and that you weren't going to drop it.
You told the man who killed Hugh that I was after his killer. Did it occur to you that might make me his next victim?
I didn't know he'd killed Hugh.
Are you sure about that, Grant?
What are you talking about?
Barron had an accomplice when he killed Hugh. Smith said it was Aaron Gold, but that was a lie. Baron murdered Gold to prevent him from telling me about Smith's involvement in Hugh's death. The second man, Grant. The one who was there when Baron dragged Hugh out of his car and injected him with enough heroin to kill him. Was that you?
You can't honestly believe I helped Peter kill Hugh.
You never forgave Hugh for what he did to you when you were in prep school.
So years later I helped kill him? What kind of person do you think I am, Henry?
I honestly don't know.
I lied to you about Baron, but I had nothing to do with Hugh's death. Look, I didn't know you from Adam when you called me and told me Hugh was dead and that you had questions for me. Of course I called Peter to let him know about you. Of course I agreed to help him find out who you were and what you wanted. I don't apologize for that. But yes, I should have told you.
Why didn't you?
Your world is black and white. Good guys and bad guys. Us versus them. I didn't want you to think I was one of them. Not after I'd started to fall in love with you.
But you are one of them, Grant. Another rich guy who takes care of his own. No matter the cost to anyone else.
It's not fair. You know me better than that.
I'm not sure I know you at all. Tell me. If I hadn't figured out for myself about you and Baron, would you have ever told me?
What would have been the point? It was over. Henry, forgive me.
Goodbye, Grant. I heard him get up and listened to his footsteps padding softly in the sand as he walked away. I sat there, alone, until the fog obliterated all traces of the sun. Then I got up too, and went off in search of the nearest bar.
You've been listening to Lay Your Sleeping Head, a Henry Rios mystery. If you enjoyed this podcast, please spread the word on social media. We depend upon your support to keep this series going. For updates and behind-the-scene extras, visit us at our Facebook page, The Henry Rios Mysteries, or at michaelnavawriter.com under the podcast tab. We'd also love to hear from you. Message us on Facebook or email us at persigopress@gmail.com. That's persigopress@gmail.com. This is an abridged version of the novel, Lay Your Sleeping Head. You can buy the complete novel at Amazon. For this episode, our cast was Armando Rey as Henry Rios, Bobby Singer as John Smith, Douglas Georgis as Grant Hancock, and James Warren Boyd as the butler. Our director is Russell Kaltschmidt. Our sound engineer is Dave Peck. Music and sound effects were composed by Josh DeRosa. The episode was written and produced by Michael Nava. Thank you for listening to our show.